Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It's Monday, December 2nd, 2019, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 283. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and joining me on this cyberist of all Mondays is Kato.
No.
It's Kato.
It's just a total...
Kato rejects Cyber Monday.
Yeah. Totally normal Monday so today.
Totally normal. Well, stay tuned for the for the post show. Patrick Klepek also here joining us. Hi, Patrick.
I'm here.
Hi. Are you feeling rested? You both feeling renewed?
No, not rested. No,
is
not
because,
rested
at all. Are you mad about Mario Maker again?
No, not about. No. No, this is more just Thanksgiving. We went to Wisconsin, had a lot of friends that were in from out of town, and so it was a lot of make some poor decisions about how late to stay up, but still got to be up at 7 a.m. So it's just, you know, burning the candle at both ends. So.
Well, then
the end of that Watchmen episode this weekend. Woo!
I've heard some things. I'm now saving it up because my mom and my stepdad want to watch it with me. So I'm like, I'm not going to watch it until I get home for the holidays.
Oh, cool.
And that'll be a fun binge watch. I'm also back on Mandalorian
now. It is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You like it?
That last episode.
I haven't seen the last episode of Mandalorian yet. I generally like it.
There's a lot to watch these days. Your time is precious. Yeah. At least you would like to watch something, go for it.
It
certainly goes for it. I don't know if it's going to land with everybody, but it certainly goes for it in a way that is.
I'm also trying to catch up on The Expanse, which is a series I like and it's coming back.
Yeah.
But I am back like a full season and a half. And so it's like I need to commit.
Yeah.
And instead.
That's hitting next week, isn't it?
It is next week. Instead, what I've been doing is watching.
I tried to get into that. Like the first season starts so slow.
It starts slow.
I've heard it like it takes a while. But my we watched like two episodes and my wife was like, we could be watching something we both enjoy right now. I was like, I know. But like, everyone say like, give it six episodes. She's like, nah, fuck that. Why don't you give it six episodes and let's watch something else?
Damn, good on her. Instead of watching things I should be watching, I've been watching Chip and Ironicus play Metal Gear Solid 5.
Okay.
Chip and Ironicus old school something awful Let's Players. it is one Metal Gear Solid 5. Whew. That fucking mess of a game. What a disaster that had some real cool shit in it. What a collection of great ideas poorly executed on. Except for a lot of the mission, like game stuff. Like, I love that shit. It's also, I just want to shout this out at the time. I did this on Twitter over the weekend, but I want to shout it out here too. Chip Cheesem is the name of the Let's Player, and General Ironicus, Chip and Ironicus have like a Patreon and they do like a bunch of different Let's Plays. But it is like such a vision into a different world watching their Let's Play because it is like, I wish this is what blew up instead of live streams. you played that game, Patrick? Did you play MGS5 at all? When it came out?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm with you. The story, you know, didn't do anything for me as the case with everything except for maybe the third game in the series. But I liked the gameplay enough to push through it.
So they do Chip does a thing where he's like, plays through that game plays through just about every important mission, any mission that has like cool, weird, gimmicky solutions, or like even a difference between stealth and violent like solutions, will play through it multiple times, edits it down, has lots of like, you know, the kind of different paths are all tied to a different sub character version of Snake that he has cooked up, like Vapor Snake, who is the snake who vapes all the time. And only uses
sense.
Like the water pistol and smoke grenades and all the weird
wow.
like the rocket arm and weird gimmicky shit. And
that's
it's just
great.
Like so well edited and so well made and is just like it's a joy to watch. Because it has like the benefit of a live stream of someone being like, oh, I cannot believe they're doing this shit. This is fucked up. Or like, you know, running joke bits. But also has like the you know, precise hand of an editor involved. And so like instead of watching these missions go on forever or needing to sit through a cutscene that doesn't do anything, like you fast forward through some of that stuff. And it is just like a joy, and also it breaks my heart that like this is one of the best things I've watched on in video game internet space all year, and it has like, you know, 1/100th of the views of a ninja stream or something. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Right. Oh, please, I wish add another zero to that fucking watch number. Like, please, like they deserve that. Anyway, that's what I, instead of watching
NFL analyst, Fortnite player, ninja.
Fuck off. Did you see that? Ah. Did you see this?
His response was even worse. So he sent out a tweet. It was basically like plenty of people have made this tweet like this. It was like, hey, all a kicker has to do is kick the ball. Why do they miss the kick so often?
It's
which is
so
an absent-minded
funny.
Thought to have.
He says,
but then of course was a yeah. Read the quote.
Well, let me now though. I would say he deleted. I didn't know that he deleted it.
He deleted it.
I just clicked through to get it, guys. I have the version of it. I have the version of it that's like.
Did he keep the apology or like the snarky response to being dragged?
I don't know. Well, okay. Here's the tweet as it was. I'll never understand how college and NFL football teams allow kickers that just miss kicks. I feel like there has to be pools of kickers in the USA that won't miss simple kicks or snappers that won't mess the snaps. IDK, man. It seems so silly. Would love opinions on this.
I'm sure he got some fucking opinions.
Oh yeah, he got some opinions. What was the snarky response that you loved?
Well, it was classic double down. I was just being curious. It was something along that I was like, wow, like I guess we shouldn't be curious about things we don't understand and ask for feedback because then people just get mad at you. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Fuck you.
Yep. One thing I learned today is if I'm curious and unsure of something, is to never ask for the internet's opinion because I'm gonna get fucking roasted. Yeah, dude.
Yep.
Yeah.
There was another one that really irritated me recently that he had because I think I saw this as I was like, I don't really follow him. And it's just like, oh, this is a reason to scroll through his feed. And it was something along the lines of like how he's found such balance in his life. And like I think it was a line that said, money can't buy like a good work-life balance. I was like, actually, it can. Actually, 100%, like $50 million from Microsoft or whatever goes a long way towards like work-life balance. Like, I am not trying to, I've read profiles of him. Like,
yeah,
he
yeah.
has participated in a toxic like culture of needing to stream all of the time. Yeah. And that is not unique to him. But the notion that like tens of millions of dollars don't help you make you think like, I'm not going to stream tonight. Like, nah, dude. Like that would, a lot of people would have better work life, mental health if they had the financial means to achieve it.
It's very funny. I wish the original tweet was still there because the original like.
But he left the follow up?
The curiosity one is definitely still up. Yeah, 100%.
Weird.
He must have deleted it and made that follow up. Like that follow up feels like this half a
pile. No, it was, they were both there. God. They were both there. That's when I checked it.
I found the one that I love, which is this person's not a streamer. This is a lawyer, a founding partner of, I think, an esports law firm. Yeah, the world's first dedicated esports law firm. Bryce Bloom says, I'm with you, but kicking is almost purely mental at the highest level. These guys can casually make 50-yarders outside of a game condition, but it's a different thing entirely in game. And Ninja's response was, dude, I would be paying tens of thousands of dollars to get my kicker therapy and make him practice meditation with monks in the off season. If it's a mental game, which it definitely is, secure that mental game. Yeah, doc. We just gotta send kicker. You just gotta send kickers off to a monastery in the off season to get their head right for the game. Listen, It is very silly that I give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I don't care. It's funny. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I don't. But it is funny that this is a person who the reason we're talking about it is because he's pretty good at Fortnite, and because of that, and he's good at streaming. He's successful at streaming. He has like 5 million followers on Twitter or whatever. Anyway, it was very fun. The only thing that was fun for me this week in football, I don't want to talk about the Eagles. So, so keep on moving.
Rob and I get to watch the Bears play the Cowboys together this Thursday.
Oh, that's all right.
That's a treat. That'll be fun no matter what happens. If they are terrible,
yeah,
we'll have a great time.
I'm rooting for you.
If they're great,
yeah,
we'll have a great time.
The NFC East is really, it's a tight race, so I would really appreciate it if you won.
Yeah, yeah, the Bears in a division where there is a 9-3 and an 8-2, and then the Cowboys hanging out and the Eagles hanging out there 6-6.
Please, the Eagles are 5-7 now. We lost to Miami. Miami fucking Dolphins. Anyway.
Yo, but it was worth it for that trick play.
Wait, the Miami Look up that Dolphins? Trick play.
Yeah, they beat us. They beat us with the, and they didn't beat
wow,
us.
Even Cotto knows. Even Cotto's like, ha ha, you lost to the Dolphins.
Yeah, I used to live there.
Yeah.
Fucking, they're a joke. They've never been good.
Yeah, it's bad.
They had one guy. That one guy one time.
Yeah, they had him for a while.
Yeah.
Classic. One guy one time.
One guy one time. Put it on a t-shirt, Dolphins fans. I can't talk shit. Why am I talking shit? They just kicked my ass.
Anyway,
video games. They're out there. The ones I've been playing, I've been playing MechWarrior 5. I can't talk about it. I can say I've been playing MechWarrior 5. I'll talk about that next week.
That's right.
That'll be, look forward to that conversation. As Patrick noted, Patrick and Robert both going to be in town a little later this week for us to start recording some of the end of year stuff and presumably to take care of some Brooklyn business. I don't know what goes on behind closed doors anymore here. I airdrop in for the podcast and then I leave. But I'm curious what y'all have been playing since I've only been playing stuff I can't talk about. Kato, you told me this morning you did it. You didn't collect them all.
No, I did not. I quote unquote.
In fact, I saw you were like, I never saw that Pokemon. You were looking at a list of Pokemon when I came in here, and you were like, what? Where's that Pokemon from?
Yeah. I quote unquote finished. I finished the campaign, and there's still, that's the thing, the credits rolled, but then there's still story afterwards. There's like other shit to do. So I'm not like really done anyways. And yeah, I've only got like 200 of the like 400, whatever.
Jeez.
So.
But you wrapped the game up. I wrapped up. Sword.
Yeah. Sword.
How'd it go?
All right. You know, it actually feels like this game has, it has some interesting ideas that could have been fleshed out in a way that previous games had, you know, I mean, obviously, they're all kids' games, so they're pretty simplistic in the ways that they kind of tackle certain issues and things. But in the past couple of games, it has felt like they've veered more into telling slightly more complex stories from the way that the original like kind of did a very simple story that had like different like little offshoots that were nice. And this one, I feel like, kind of takes a step back a little bit in that storytelling, in a way where I feel like they're trying to say something about. So, like, there's a lot of environmental stuff in this game. There's a lot of like mention of like climate change and things, even in like certain Pokemon. Like,
right,
the new Weezing actually takes in polluted air and like cleans it. Or there's a ghost. There's a coral Pokemon from old games, but there's a new version in this one that is a ghost because it's dead.
Because it's dead?
Yeah. Stark white coral.
What's
you
that
know.
Called?
Corsola?
Course, good name.
Yeah. And so.
More like Corpsola.
Yeah.
Because it's dead.
Because it's dead. Because it's fucking dead.
Because they killed it.
And.
Because we killed it.
Yeah. Because we. Yeah. And like the story goes into kind of. An attempt at like talking about the way that energy and the environment kind of, you know, the ways that we are making energy for humans fucks up the environment. But in a way that like I feel like past couple games would have actually had that storyline be forefronted. Because what it used to be was the gyms or whatever those were would be your kind of excuse for setting out on this journey.
Yeah,
but whatever the actual story focus was usually about whatever team, like the evil, like, and it's usually pretty mustache twirly, like simplicity, but what they were like talking about could be interesting. Like what they were trying to do, like the one team two games ago that was like considering whether like trying to free all the Pokemon.
XY ones were, was that Sun and Moon?
No, before that.
Was that X and Y?
No, maybe it was X and Y where they were trying to release
the France one.
Yes, the France one was the one where they were trying to like free every Pokemon.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Team Flare.
Woo!
No. It must have been
for wrestling fans.
Platinum.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was Team Flare's deal? I feel like
Team Flare's
their...
deal was they were what did Lysander want to do? He was trying to capture a Pokemon that was really old because of time stuff.
Can I just spoil this game?
I think. Yeah, I mean, fine. I forget.
This is... Lysander reveals he's the leader of Team Flare.
Yeah.
Woo!
He was also...
and sends out a live broadcast, blah, blah, blah. He reveals Team Flare's plan to use the ultimate weapon, a machine built by the King of Kalos 3,000 years ago to eliminate all life.
That can eliminate all life.
But he doesn't want to do that. He wants to... Why does he want to do... Does he want to do genocide? What's happening? I thought you said some of these guys were good.
No.
They're not good. Not that good one. Intentions.
Before...
This guy sucks.
That guy sucked. The one before that, the Diamond and Pearl, I think, was the one where Team Plasma? It was a P or something. They were trying to, like, release everyone's Pokemon. Mm. Like, just, like... It was kind of a weird PETA, like, adjacent thing.
Sure.
Team
Galactic?
Galactic, maybe? No, wait. Wasn't Galactic Sun and Moon? That was Sun and Moon, wasn't it?
No.
I'm getting these all mixed up. Like, there's the so kids. Many.
Right? Weren't they kids? They weren't Team Galactic. Galactic feels too big for
that. No, you're right. You're right. No, what was it? Team...
There's too many teams. We're going to be here all day. Too many teams.
That's the thing. And then... So, what I'm trying to say is that usually whatever that is the kind of the bulk of what is actually the storyline, and the gym battles are kind of actually more side things that are, like, they're like the progression.
Yeah.
And the story is happening
off to the side. We're not off to the side.
Yeah.
But, like, you go to a town because the gym is there.
Right.
But then the town has a story.
Right.
And the story... is part of whatever the team, the bad guy team is of that game.
Yeah.
Or it's a side story with your rival, or you go to a ghost mansion.
Right.
Or whatever. Yeah. And there's, like, a story there. And then at the end of it's like an episode of the show. Right. Where, like, yes, there might be a battle with a gym leader at a certain point.
But that's not, like, the point, really.
Right.
This one kind of flips that, where the gyms are the point. Like, the story is mostly you going through this, like, which have been expanded, and personally one of the more interesting ways that the gyms have kind of played out, and one of the more this whole game in general, just because it's, you know, it's on new, it's on a Switch, they have like more, there's more like kind of set dressing and stuff that they can do that makes like battles in the gyms with like a crowd of people, like, and the way the crowd reacts to certain moves and things like that is all like makes it, it's another one of those things that's like, oh, this is like you're really in the world of Pokemon for like probably the first time, because before it was, you know, there was enough remove there from once you're in a battle, it was very kind of set, and like nothing around you or outside of the battle reacted. It was like the battle was happening. Nothing else is gonna really happen. In here, there's like there's much more done to kind of make the battles exciting, and the gyms themselves weren't all just like a lineup of trainers and then the gym boss. There were like puzzles and things like that instead.
Mm.
But then the side story feels like it was basically like...
Are you trying not to
yeah, it's
be
like,
too dismissive?
Yeah, it's... Part of the problem is that it feels like it's trying to do... It at once kind of feels like it's trying to say something about who is responsible for certain things when it comes to the environment. Things about like what children should be worried about or should be doing about environment and what their voices can do to help versus who's really responsible, like adults.
Yeah.
But that shifts the focus of the story and what I could what you would think would be interesting parts of the story away from that conflict of that side conflict and like focuses you down just like you're just this sports person doing the sports thing.
I see. So you're like in some ways it's like, hey, this isn't your fault. So this isn't
right
your situation to solve.
Right. There's multiple times where adults are like, don't worry about that. You go to the next gym. I'll go do some digging.
Right.
And like things happen off screen a lot and you hear about it. And it's just like usually those you would have done that, right? You would have gone off and like fought the team yourself,
and
like,
found their weird factory. And
like,
oh wow, they're
there is a weird factory in this one,
Pokemon,
and it's not even. It's like one. It's like, I guess spoilers for the weird factory. It comes at the like right before the final battle, and it's like two rooms. The fights were good, but it's like not this whole like. Thing where you're like fighting the whole team or whatever, anything like that. Like it's very streamlined and simplified, right. And like it just feels like this game is like a reset of like we're building a new systems, like the wild area and the way that the gyms work now, that do make it more immersive as a Pokemon game, but they had to kind of pull back on the density and complexity of areas and offshoot areas and things like that. Unfortunately, this game, the story stuff is much more focused on the gyms, and like those are interesting, but it's very much not a game I could recommend where in that way, where like a couple of the last games had interesting story stuff alongside the gyms that had kind of interesting story beats, but this one is so much more focused on you just kind of going through the whole gym challenge stuff, and that stuff is fun, but it's mostly just like it's actually kind of like a sports anime, you know,
you're gonna
win in the end and everything's great because you won.
That's life. You're gonna win in the end and everything's great because you won. That's how it works. Well, I know they're doing like some update stuff, and I'm curious how that'll go, and let me know. I'm curious to see how they keep moving on that stuff. I know there was snowing in everywhere around the Pokemon world yesterday. That's neat.
Yeah,
that was fun. Speaking of Nintendo and updates, Patrick, are you excited to play as Link in Mario Maker 2, which they announced today in a trailer?
I am. Yeah, it's like a little bittersweet. I've been really disappointed at how Nintendo has handled Mario Maker 2 post-release. There has only been one update to Mario Maker 2 post. There was a small patch after release. It was just like bug fix stuff. And then there was one update, which was adding the multiplayer stuff that should have been there at launch, but that everyone threw such a shit over. There was like, Nintendo basically said, you don't want to play with your friends. And everyone said, yeah, I do. And so they added that. So, you know, kudos to them, I guess, for, you know, doing that, but literally nothing, not even a fun controversy, which happened all the time in Mario Maker 1, where they would issue a patch and it would just say like general gameplay improvements and it would not explain at all. But what it would actually do is like change the amount of time you can jump on a P switch before it like switches, which would then break a bunch of levels that were like specifically designed based on a certain timing. So there hasn't even been a space to be mad at them over doing things that they don't explain themselves over. So it's just been strange because Smash Brothers, Splatoon 2, it is not as though Nintendo doesn't know how to like do incremental like community service driven updates for a service game. And I thought that Mario Maker 2 would have qualified for that. So like the longer it went on without an update, my suspicion was that, oh, they're just going to do a really big update. But the problem is, and hopefully this like revitalizes the community, and there's still been some cool stuff that's happened after a lot of people have been away. But like if you, like this is just anecdotal, but going through different creators I follow, different folks that, even just friends that have played it, somewhere around like late July, they stopped playing Mario Maker. So yeah, they put out a trailer for, they go from not talking at all about Mario Maker 2, what the roadmap is, what they might be doing in the future, to just like, hey, by the way, 2 days from now, we're going to have an enormous update. We're going to add a whole nother playable character, and it's Link, and he's going to have a shield and a sword, and oh shit, he's got bombs. Also, you can bow and arrow. That's cool.
Bow and arrow, bombs.
Plus, in addition to a
Pokey.
Yeah, there's Pokies. There's a lot of things that, you know, I don't – look, in no world am I, like, asking the workers of Nintendo to burn the midnight oil to give updates faster, but I think Nintendo could have done a better job. In an ideal world, what would have happened was there would have been, like, a clearer roadmap of, like, here's what we're building to in December, and, like, we've got a big surprise that we're not going to tell you about, but it's going to change the way you play Mario Maker. Mm-hmm. And along the way was, like, a couple of tools that you know, things that you could, like, spice up your levels with, gave people a reason to jump back in and do something. They've chosen not to do that. I think it's a curious choice. I'm not sure if it'll pay off, but I think it is has a better chance because of Link. So what they've done is, in Mario Maker 1, and one of the things that I was bummed they got rid of in Mario Maker 2, was that there were costumes you could unlock by playing Nintendo sanctioned, like Nintendo developed levels that they were uploading like every week or like every couple of weeks. There were also costumes for every amiibo. And so you could put that on. It would change Mario's aesthetic, but didn't mechanically change anything about them. But it did mean that people could make like a Pokemon stage and like try and do some theming around that. It was just like a neat reason to keep playing Mario Maker, even if you weren't making levels, and gave creators like a just something new to play with. They got rid of that in Mario Maker 2. And if their response to getting rid of that was to do something like this, I think it sets up an interesting foundation for the future. And I think I'm going to – there'll probably be a post on Waypoint by the time this podcast goes up that people theorized when Mario Maker came out that maybe this was laying the groundwork for a whole new sort of like franchise pillar for Nintendo where it's like, oh, like a Super Kirby Maker, Super Zelda Maker I think is the one that people have thought about the most.
Yeah.
And I've always been suspect that that was possible – especially the Zelda one, because I just think 3D is fundamentally different in terms of like designing like a level or a space. I not that it's impossible. There wouldn't be a way to do it if anyone's capable of pulling it off. Maybe it's Nintendo. But that just seemed like a long-term goal. And in the short term, maybe there was something else they could do in that space. And what I would love for Mario Maker to turn into, whether it's 2 or maybe this is the end state of Mario Maker 3, is that Mario Maker actually just becomes like the Mario Kart or Super Mario Brothers, in which what if you take the foundation of Mario, a platformer, it's 2D, and like 2D is just like it's when you're thinking about how to design a thing, that's just an easier slate to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And you added like Kirby mechanics, like put in Kirby and then add Kirby mechanics, like add in Metroid and add Metroid mechanics. Like there's a world where it's still a game like large about like running and jumping, but and there's so much Mario stuff happening, but that you can really spice up the possibility space by taking Nintendo's slate of characters and doing the Smash Brothers thing and just like throwing in their moveset and like what does that do to like, you know, what if you added a Marth and you could like jump in the air and air dash forward with a sword? You know what I mean? Like there's just all this stuff that would be like super fucking cool that I would love. I hope that's the future. Because at some point you run out of a new spike to add. And so if the end goal is like, if Smash Brothers is ending, right? Like, cause they sort of took it to its logical conclusion before they reboot it in some fashion for the next go round. I'd love if the next throw all the characters in and see what happens is Mario Maker, because I think there's a really healthy future in like Super Nintendo Maker,
right?
And then building from there, as opposed to a Zelda Maker.
Yeah, this is definitely. Because, go ahead, I'll let you finish.
No, go ahead. You're fine.
I was going to say that, like, seeing this one was like, oh, this is what I wanted from Mario Maker 2 to begin with, and helped fill in that gap of like, well, why wouldn't they let me do the costume stuff again? And the answer is because they had something bigger in mind. And the mind, like, I saw this and I was like, yo, I cannot wait to see what people ask of players who now have all these extra abilities. We kind of went over them quickly, but like Link has a bow and arrow that can aim in different angles, has bombs that can be used to blow stuff up, has a shield which can reflect, or is it just block stuff or does it reflect stuff back? I don't remember. Whatever. You know, it does something weird. You can do like the sword thrust, like the down thrust with the master sword. And all of those things are like, oh, you can start building other types of games around that set of abilities or other types of – not just other types of levels.
And
but like,
the bow and arrow goes not just forward,
right,
but it goes at a diagonal, upper and lower, and interacts with objects. So like there was one sequence Nintendo showed where Link was going up, you know, like he was riding a thwomp or something like that and shot at a set of coins and picked up a red coin as they were going up. So it's just like that's like fundamentally shifts – what a level could even be in Mario Maker to a degree that is exciting all over again. Because I agree with you. Like, Mario Maker 2, at its core, was like a nice, in some ways, a nice refinement. Or it was mostly just, hey, they put Mario Maker on the platform that more people are on.
Yeah.
But I don't think they necessarily forwarded, advanced the core idea in like a transformative way, which was okay for a little while. But I think the drop-off from a lot of creators suggests that there needed to be something else, and I'm glad that's not being saved for a Mario Maker 3, and that if the next like year and a half of Mario Maker 2 is them dropping in stuff like this, and then that logically leads to you being tremendously excited for whatever they would do with a third game, because there'd be a clear path to totally shaking up your ex. Because I just don't know that they could do a Mario Maker 3 that's just, and now they added Mario Brothers 2, you know,
this was
Doki
the chance
Doki
to
Panic
do that.
Art.
They had the chance to do that this time, and they could still do that this time. Like, they could still do that in a patch, and I'd be like, oh, wow, that's really cool. They added the Doki Doki Panic, the Mario 2 US stuff.
I can pick up plants now.
Yeah. Well, like, that's the other thing is, the Link, for me, seeing Link opens up the door to stuff like that. We're like, oh, okay, they are not like afraid of adding in something that does fundamentally change how you move through a level and like interact with stuff. That is a thing that's on the table. So maybe they would do a Mario 2. Maybe they would do a Metroid. Maybe they would do, you know, whatever. Though I will say,
or give Link a grappling hook.
Give Link a grappling hook. Absolutely. it is very funny to see that it's Legend of Zelda, like NES Link, but it's a side scroller. So it's like he's moving like Adventure of Link.
Right.
And for a moment, I had the thought, like, what if you gave Link a mushroom? Would he turn into
Adventure Link?
But I don't think, I bet you can't do that.
Oh.
Because I bet, because it's already a pickup to turn into Link. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's just the transform. Like, you, I don't know that you can start a level as Link. It's more that you
lose Link if you get hit?
Probably not. Oh. No, I bet it actually is just you must have spawned as Link, because otherwise there's, you know, you could, if you're making a level that's contingent on Link's abilities, if you got hit by a Goomba or whatever. I don't know. I'm sure that maybe is answered by people who have rewatched the video more closely, and we'll, you know, it comes out on Thursday, so it's not exactly
I have this video open in front of me. There's a great moment of them showing off, like, again, it's like one of those things where it's like, oh wow, look at all these new tools and stuff you could build with it. There's a multiplayer moment where it's four Links and they are being squished, like there are two thwomps coming in from the left and the right side, and on top of the thwomps are like pokies or some other type of spiky enemy, and it's like, all right, two of the people have to be on guard duty to bounce the thwomps off with the shields while the other two are poking away at the pokies with the bow and arrow. Like, that's awesome.
That's really
build more cool, like, that seems cool. I'm excited to see what people build with this stuff, especially Patrick, because I know you've been like kind of the long-suffering Mario Maker fan who is still having a good time streaming this game, certainly from what I've seen.
But I told people in my like who watch my streams, I was like, hey, I think I'm gonna like wind these down at the end of the month because it's just kind of running out of, like, I still really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of my like personal time to give up to do it. And I was like, okay, well, if Nintendo's not going to keep adding to this, I'm not going to just like sit out here hoping it happens. And of course, right as I tell people, I'm thinking about winding it down. They
so funny.
Put out a huge update.
They heard you. They were like, can't stop.
We can't lose Patrick
in the mornings. We need Mario Maker mornings. I don't want to undersell some of the other stuff that's in that trailer too. Like the ninja speedrun stuff seems dope.
Yeah.
So they added essentially, like, for the first time, canonically, in a video game, Nintendo acknowledging that speedrunning is a thing.
It exists.
Which, I mean, the video game industry as a whole more or less doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, they don't necessarily, they're not against it, but it's rare to see games incorporate an acknowledgement of it. Because I guess because speedrunning at its core is often breaking games in ways that developers don't want to acknowledge for whatever reason. But yeah, there's now a mode where Nintendo will release levels in which, if you've ever played Super Mario or Super Meat Boy, where like every time you die in Super Meat Boy, like the next run that you do, you just see your death like run out. And so you can suddenly have dozens or hundreds of little Meat Boys running around getting killed. And then finally the one run that makes it through. And it seems like Nintendo has picked up on that idea, and essentially you'll play a level and there'll be some number of ghosts that are players who either played or completed the level. I'm not sure exactly how it populates that. I hope hopefully it's people who died along the way and not just people who completed it. But essentially, like, that's one of the big things I was hoping they'd add to Mario Maker 2 was a ghost mode.
Yeah.
Like, it's so frustrating to play a level that you realize you're not going to be able to finish, or you don't want to finish, but you think is creatively interesting, and all you want to do is just see how someone did it. And so this is a kind of half step or a version of that in which, you know, you'll be able to see what people perform or like race against, you know, other people. It's not your friends, you know, that's also, you know, it seems like logical extensions of this are, you know, hot. You can race against your friend's best times or see what the world record is on a level. But none of that stuff is here yet.
Right.
And that's also like, that's the other disappointing thing about the patch is, there's still no good way to share levels, right? So Mario Maker 1 figured, like, they have a website. It's called the Super Mario Bookmark. It, like, it exists. Like, every level that was put into Mario Maker had an HTML link that was created on their website, so you could send that to people easily and share it through Twitter, and it had a screenshot of the level. It had the world record. It had the creator. You could then log in, click a button, and it added it to a queue in Mario Maker. Like, it was... And that they just didn't support that for Mario Maker 2. And the thought was they'd do what they did with Smash Brothers, which is just incorporate it into the app, which I still don't think is a great solution because a website is ubiquitous and works cross-platform as opposed to an app that is just less you can do with it. But they didn't neither of those things. There's no sharing in the app. There's no website, even though they fucking built one. So hopefully stuff like that comes later, but I think it's a meaningful update, but it's at the same time disappointing because it's just confusing. Like, they just don't seem like they – it's just like Nintendo does their thing, but it's never quite clear that they're actually listening to the people who are playing the game.
I'm curious to put this in conversation with something else. I'm really curious where your head and heart are at with this as like a – not a precursor in design or in what it needs to be necessarily, but in terms of where your level of investment was coming in with Spelunky 2, which got delayed till next year, right? Obviously, it's not going to sneak out at the end of the year this year. But in terms of just like, not that you were unrealistic or anything like that about what Mario Maker 2 meant. Do you know what I mean? But like, you didn't, you spent years not streaming in the morning. And the thing that you were like, I'm going to come back. I'm going to start doing Mario Maker mornings again. Because I love Mario Maker so much. I'm excited to, you know, have the community and blah, blah, blah. And you've done a great job with it. And the community has sent in good stuff. And I watched that child laugh at you when you died a bunch. And that level was great. and like, so it's not like, I'm not trying to say like nothing, that it was no good out of it or something.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious where you're at now thinking about this in relation to something like Spelunky 2. Because I know you're just as, if not deeper into the Spelunky, like Spelunky had a similarly important role in like your day-to-day life for a little while there.
Yeah, I'm nervous about Spelunky 2 because I like there's a very real world where it's just a sequel. And I guess like I don't mean that to be like as condescending as it might come across, but like Spelunky is like one of my favorite games of all time. I think it's one of the like a transformative game was for a lot of people, opened a lot of eyes into you know, different types of games. And if you'd asked me, like, do you want a Spelunky 2? My response, I think, always was pretty consistent of, I guess, but I don't know what I want from Spelunky 2, which then is, you know, it's then contingent on the designer to, you know, surprise you, like, because I didn't want Spelunky in the first place. I bounced off that game for, like, a year and a half before I fell back into it. And Mario Maker 2 was similar, but I also gave Mario Maker 2 a pass because I thought, oh, you know, by putting it on Switch, they'll have lots of updates that are coming along for it. They've learned a lot of lessons. It's on a platform where there are more people. So like it's okay for it to be kind of a Mario Maker 1.5 because Mario Maker 1 wasn't given nearly as much of a chance by being on mostly a dead platform. And Spelunky 2, I mean, you and I played it last year. Was that last year?
God,
that was
last
year. Was that this year?
That was this year.
Last year.
That was at PAX. Was it PAX East, right? Was that not at PAX East?
I think. Yeah. That was at PAX East.
Yeah, because it was at a Sony booth, which means it was not at E3. I think it was PAX East and not PAX West.
Yeah, no, you're right, because we didn't go to PAX West, so it has to
yeah we did
has to have been PAX.
Last year, not this year. We did not.
Well, either way, like we played it and it's Spelunky, right? Like, but I don't think I walked away from it going like, oh, I understand.
Right, I didn't
why this is Spelunky 2.
No, I didn't get the pitch. Like, you know what? I love Spelunky. I'm excited to play more Spelunky.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if there's a larger pitch or if it is just a good sequel, you know? And I would think it'd be fine with
which
the ladder.
Which would be fine. Yes, I'll enjoy that. But, you know, it's like I want the Bloodborne of Spelunky, which like part of the reason I love Bloodborne so much is it's obviously a Dark Souls game, but it is also like fundamentally transformative in important areas that it feels so distinctly its own as opposed to being just another one of those. Sekiro, I think, is the same way, right? Yep. Like it shares a commonality, but is so different in important ways that maybe aren't on the surface, like recognize, like if you someone who doesn't play Souls games would look at it and go, yeah, it just looks like another one of those. And you're like, no, it's not. Yeah. Definitely not. I mean, it is, but like, ah. Yeah. And so I'm curious, I'm hopeful that something like Spelunky 2 has something like that. I just don't know what it is. But also, I strongly suspect Derek Yu is keeping a lot under, or I hope that Derek Yu is keeping a lot, the designer of Spelunky is keeping a lot of under his hat. And so much of Spelunky was the discovery. And I'm going to be excited. That's going to be if nothing else, the exciting part of Spelunky 2 will be just, I don't know what this thing is, and then realize, like, constantly every day people finding new shit that they didn't know was in the game or how it interacts with different parts of the game. So, yeah, I don't know what to expect of that game. But, yeah, I'm nervous of being a sequel because it could just be a sequel, which in some ways is itself a disappointment, even if that's, I guess, unfair to put on. You know, if you make one groundbreaking game, like, cool, you know, like
yeah,
that's,
but
you did it.
Better than I've done, you know, like. Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Totally. God, I'm very curious about that. I'm trying to think, are there any other similar, like, I guess there was just that, I guess if there was ever for you, like another Binding of Isaac straight up, though, I know that they just released or he just released that deck building game, right?
Yeah, it was just okay. I didn't care for it that much. But also deck building games, I'm hot and cold on. So
yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in this specific space. Because like, there's something about those stuff. But the other thing that brings Spelunky and Mario together, obviously, is like there's a degree of like, this is a good stream game. And they both came during a period of like the boom of this style of daily streaming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was like, hey, this is running.
Well, there's a chaos to both of them,
yeah,
right? Like, it's part of the reason they work so well as stream games is that you die a lot in Spelunky specifically. You always died in such creative ways.
Yes.
Was like half the fun was like you could know exactly what you're supposed to do and you still jump on a spike or you know something in the level design is strange and weird and surprises you despite it being hour 45 of you playing the game. So
which again is similar in some ways to Souls and the reasons people like those games.
Yeah,
which
no,
like,
absolutely.
Even though it's like a set level, you're being surprised as you play through. You're trying out new stuff. It can be very chaotic when things break bad. So it is funny to I think one of the things that we've actually. We could be here for Dark Souls, except that FromSoft fucking pumps out games that like. Imagine a world where we were only at Dark Souls 2. Imagine a world where Dark Souls 3 was coming out this year and they didn't put out Bloodborne. Do you know what I mean? Or something like that. Like, that's the cadence of those games in terms of the 2010s. Like, we're going to have some conversations soon about stuff throughout the years, throughout the decade. And, like...
They release a game every 18 months.
Right? It's wild.
Holy
like,
shit.
Like, we haven't seen Elden Ring, but I'm sure that's coming out next fall, maybe next summer.
Yeah, you think for a lot... console launch?
I'm surprised it hasn't been unveiled yet, so it's got to be part of the spring next gen reveals. I guess that's probably the first time we'll see game. It'll end up being one of those cross gen games.
All right.
Where
I'm just going to walk through just Souls. I'm not even going to talk about their various mech games like the Another Centuries episode or Armored Core series or their Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn game or any of their other Verdict Day, all the other good mech games that they've made. Demon's Souls, February 2009. Right. Dark Souls 2011, September 2011. So that was like a, you know, two and a half year gap there. Then Dark Souls 2, 2014. So again, they're putting out other stuff in the middle of this, you know, great, great games like Steel Battalion, Heavy Armor. Yikes. Dark Souls 2 was 2014. Dark Souls, I'm skipping DLC and stuff too. Bloodborne was March 2015. So less than a year. That was like 2 months apart, right? That was the thing.
DLC is actually important because it fills in the gap years.
You're right. You're totally right. Because Scholar of the First Sin was February 2015. Bloodborne was March 2015. Presumably Dark Souls 1 DLC was in the middle there between 1 and 2, obviously. And then 3 was 2016. And then Sekiro was 2019. So even the longest gap there is about 3 years, I guess, if you go from Dark Souls 3 to Sekiro. But it's just like, that's a lot of games in 10 years to be about the same thing. But the thing I like about that is, like, we got over the hump of, like, oh no, the hump of expectations, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
I know I'm the Dark Souls 2
defender.
Like,
oh, there'll be another one. If this one doesn't work for me, they'll, yeah.
Right, I think a lot about, like, the backlash on Dark Souls 2 of being, like, the just disappointment in it comes from a place of, like, worry that this meant that they were off track, or that they'd only caught lightning in a bottle. Mm-hmm. And I as someone who'd already loved Demon's Souls, I think I didn't go into it with that fear, and maybe that's part of why I had a more relaxed relationship with that game. But certainly by the time they put out Bloodborne, they're like, oh, wow, they're going to keep experimenting inside of this set of constraints. And that is why I wish we were at Spelunky 6. I don't actually wish that. I don't actually wish that. But this is one of those situations where it's like, I'm glad that we're there on the FromSoft stuff, because maybe they'll start turning out clunkers, and Elden Ring will be something I don't care about, and then another game they put out will be something I don't care about.
No way. I got special feelings about Elden Ring.
You got special feelings. You just read that fucking reset error thread is all you did, and you were like, yeah, that sounds good. Horses. Yeah. Okay, cool. Oh, God.
Well, like, I've cooled more and more on Sekiro as the year has gone on. And,
not me.
But, me either.
No, I know.
But yeah.
I great respect for the game. I think it's exceptionally well made. I just didn't, like, I didn't enjoy the combat. Like, I got good enough at it, but I don't think I'll ever beat it. I'm stuck at that last boss, and, like, I'm good. Like, I'm fine.
Kato over here is shaking his whole body like it's a meme.
He's just like, da 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 da.
No, we'll talk about it later this week, almost certainly. I was going to say something else that's tied to this that was about a game. Oh, speaking of Sekiro, going back to play that, I just want to briefly shout out Outer Wilds, still a great game. A friend of mine has been playing through that recently and asked me for some hints, and I was like, okay, I think I can remember that. I was like, you know, let me just boot it up real quick, because of the nature of that game, it's easy once you know where things are to, like, go check, or to check your rumor map and be like, oh, okay, right, there's this. Okay, here's what you need to do. And just, like, dipping back in that game, I meant to, like, dip in and play it for, like, 20 minutes or 10 minutes. one loop to kind of see the solution to something that he was asking me about. And instead I played for 90 minutes and was, like, clearing off a few other little loose ends I had. You haven't beaten it yet, Kato, right?
No. I've been just doing Pokemon since that came out. Gotcha. So now it's catch-up time.
Catch-up time, yeah. There's a bunch of stuff I have to do that with. I happened to record the end of my Outer Wilds playthrough, like the last, like, 2 hours or something. Mm-hmm. And I, like, as my friend was beating it and was, like, talking about what he liked about it, I was like, let me just pull this up and watch. And I ended up watching, like, 20 minutes of that, and just, like, I had to close it because it was, like, I was welling up. It was, like, putting me in my feelings. I love that game so much. That game holds up. I know it only came out this year, a few months ago, but, like, I still feel as strongly today about it as everything else. Speaking of games that I get the name wrong of, Outer Worlds. Patrick, are you still chipping away at Outer Worlds?
Yeah. Also a game I am, like, kind of getting cooler on as I, like, work my way.
That's the arc with that thing, man. It's so weird.
It's a game that wants to be, like, would have been better in the Disco Elysium. I didn't play Disco Elysium. I want to.
I'm also dipping back into
but
that.
But it's a game in which all the trapping, like, this, like, the quests are pretty good. Like, the character stuff is pretty good. But, like, the act of playing it is just, like, so boring and uninteresting. It's like, I guess I'll spam the powers again.
Yep.
And it's just odd. It's a game that would have been better served in a more, like, narrative driven format. Like, I think it's, like, it's hurt as an overall game because the expected stuff around it to support it is so, it just doesn't work at all. And then ends up hurting the storytelling because all you're doing is just kind of churning through this stuff to get there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to finish it. I finished out Monarch, and I'm doing
Byzantium. Yeah, Byzantium.
So I'm most of the way through there. So I feel like I'm, you know, two-thirds through the game at this point, so I'll finish it out. But
getting to Byzantium was cool. There's some cool stuff there. I think I like it more than Monarch, but it was also the point at which I was like, I like it more Monarch, more than Monarch, because there's not much action there. Do you know what I mean? It's mostly walk around, talk to people quests. And so, I mean, I guess there could be action there if you're playing the game a different way than I was playing it, in terms of, if you're just like gunning shit down in the streets, just like raiding that city. Time to go on a raid.
The other thing, I don't like, I've now encountered this twice where like the arc of a planet in Outer Worlds is, oh, we're going to present you with two rough choices and then, you know, pick between them. But there's always a compromise choice. Yep. There's a middle ground, which I thought worked really well in the first area. But then I thought a Monarch, the binary choice I was being given between factions, was actually like really interesting. Yes. And I was going to go the other direction. I was going to go in the fuck it, blow it all up direction, because I felt like I'd spent enough time in that planet to like understand the people. Like I felt more confident in like making the choice, as opposed to the first world where I felt like maybe I was just kind of being an outsider dick. But this one I was like, nah, okay, we're going to give it to, you know, without like the rebellion faction for a sort of thing. And so I was started going down that path. And then it just opens up but what if we could do this? And I'm like, yeah, that is the one I should do. Like, that's better for everyone. Yeah. But I wish the game had more bleak. I wanted more bleakness. I wanted the game, like, I was bummed that it came up with another, like, it undercut the choice in front of me by giving me one where everybody wins. And maybe, like, the epilogue will tell me that actually it all fell apart and they weren't able to get along, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But it's, I think part of the appeal people have of these games is like the gray moral choice. Like they like the binary being uncomfortable.
I think it's worth saying that that's a choice between like incremental reformist policies and then like more radical, like big change and like disconnecting from the core idea of like the corporation and like trying to build something outside of and in opposition to the corporations. And that is like an interesting, the way that they lay that out, because they compromise both of those positions and they support both of those positions, and they build a situation where it's like you could have, I know where I stand on this, but you could make the case. And then it does the thing that you're saying. And I think about this stuff so much in terms of like formal, not logic, but formal like kind of analysis of where the investment of development resources and where the kind of like rhetorical resources go. And so when a game gives you a third option that was locked behind choices, and that is a thing that you might not even know that that was the case with what you did, that third option only pops up if you do certain other things right in the lead up there. You lose that option if you side too heavily with one character over another character. And so it's like when a game is like, aha, you've...
Oh, when there's like the leadership struggle, one of the choices you're making towards the end there.
If you go towards the one character over the other character, it locks off that opportunity for the like kumbaya, we can all work together shit. And like at that
point... But it also feels like the game is pushing you in that 100% direction. Like, you know, from like, the jump. It wants you to encounter the third option. Like, it doesn't feel like I found an Easter egg.
It feels like when it's like the non-default option, there's a way in which it undercuts the feeling that there was that feels like the authored option. Do you know what I mean? Right. It's like when there is a path that you earn, and that is the only earned path. It's not like you earned those other two choices. Do you know what I mean? There was no way to finish Monarch without...
It's just the end of the quest.
Right, exactly. Though I do wonder, could you kill both of those characters? Could you kill everybody who was involved? How do you get off Monarch with... I bet you could. I bet if you sided with the corporation, you could just kill both of those factions, right?
But then how does... I guess I would be curious how the radio stuff... plays out because those characters are who you're supposed to talk to.
Maybe that third party doesn't give a fuck if they're dead.
Or maybe you kill them and it's just like, cool, those radio broadcasts stop, we're good.
That's probably what it is. That's the goal. The whole thing
that's
was
probably
like,
is what it is.
Yeah. Anyway.
But then the other frustrating part, oh, go ahead.
I wish that same style of thing had been, the fact that like the only place that investment of like, or that sort of like, focal point of like, hey, look, you can unlock a third solution is always that middle ground solution. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is always that. And so that's got to that is revealing the sort of procedural rhetoric at play, because it is the place with which your skill and your caution and all the stuff that makes you a good game player like eventually leads up to the reward, the narrative reward that you don't have access to if you didn't make those choices. And so that like underscores it as not the right choice necessarily, but when there isn't another choice that you can earn in that same way with the same degree of investment, there is a formal argument almost being made even if the developers don't intend to make it that way. You know what I mean? It's like when you go into a store and something is priced at $15, something is priced at $10, someone is trying to say the $15 version is better. It's the same thing, but the $15, listen, you as the consumer should understand that this one that's more expensive is supposed to be worth more. And in real life, like, one, we know that's not always the case, but in a video game where that extra $5 is an extra 5 hours of you working towards something, or is you picking the right choices, it ends up feeling like, I solved it. It's like in Mass Effect when you're able to do the renegade or the good cop option, and you get to save someone's mm-hmm. life. Like, oh wow, cool, I did the right thing. But at least in Mass Effect, you would often be able to choose between the unlocked renegade or the unlocked paragon solutions. And so you could still kind of justify it with yourself that the authors intended either of those outcomes. Whereas here, I look at Monarch and it's like, oh, this is the intended outcome, you know? Anyway.
Right. And then it's frustrating in other ways where on Byzantium, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They're, without spoiling how a quest line plays out, although like the name of the quest line, I feel like telegraphs part of how it plays out, is a side quest where you can investigate something called the Early Retirement Program. And did you do this one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when you find out what's happening at this Early Retirement Program, sure feels like the kind of thing where you should do something
immediately
with that information.
Yeah.
Someone should know about this.
You do that quest, you get all this information.
There is a rot at the center of this goddamn city.
I think that reveal is fantastic in the sense that it brings a lot of other things that you've done into alignment. And mm-hmm. it's like, oh shit, I thought I was doing side quests, but side quests are actually main quests. It makes you rethink some of the stuff you've learned about society and like what the weird experiments are. And that I think was really cool. Like there was a degree to which it's like, shit, this has all been building towards this. Mm-hmm. But Patrick, you beat that quest. I never saw any of those NPCs again. They never come up in conversation. The rest of the main plot continues, and at no point can I be like, hey, the stuff in that quest happened to people who are working on the same problem. I finished that quest, and I don't know how you finished that quest, but at the end of that quest, I was like, I need you to go talk to this other NPC I know right now. I'm begging you to go talk to this other NPC. The only way I'm going to let you live is if you go and do this. Never hear from them again. Their name is never brought up again. I don't know. And it acted, the rest of that game acted as if it was news to me that I learned that stuff in the main plot. 2 hours later, 3 hours later. It is very frustrating. It is very weird. So,
yeah. Well, like, you know, I mean, the way that quest plays out for me, because I haven't actually progressed on a lot of the main quest line stuff there. So I'm just like only treating it as a side quest thing at the moment. Like it does the thing where, and this is very common in Fallout style, like, haha, like dark choices you get as the player, where like a bad person, like an objectively bad person sends you to go check out this thing. You find out what's going on there, and then you get back to report the end of the quest mm-hmm. line to the person, and you can either tell them what you found or convince them to go check it out themselves, knowing you're sending them to a questionable fate. I guess you're supposed to like, ha ha, chuckle, like, I gotcha.
Yeah.
But what I'm really thinking is like, no, like fucking sound the alarms. Like, who do I leak the scoop to?
Yeah.
And there's just no option there. It's just like, ha ha, you fucked over that bad person. Nailed it.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it's just, I guess it's often you're seeing, you know, it's different writers, different approaches, different interpretations of different hierarchy of values for like what choice is. And I've just found it like more and more confusing as it goes along. I also just not very attached to most of the side characters. Yeah. I have a bunch of them now and I feel like they're just throwing, like, I wish it was just a smaller crew. Like I felt like in Mass Effect, I got to know everyone really well. And I feel like that happens a little bit less you like, you get like a side quest with everybody, but outside of that, I don't know. It's just, I'm not finding myself as connected with them as I want to. So I still like it, but I've definitely, in the back half, I now understand why you and Rob cooled on it as fast as you did, because I think I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, it is such a strong first impression, I think, partially because of wanting to play with
Edgewater is great, and then, yeah, it's just like sort of a mixed bag after that.
Yeah, I really, it is such a tiny, small thing, but it actually ended up meaning a lot to me in a bad way, that it was just like, I can't believe that the second tier of weapons in that game is Light Assault Rifle Mark II. And like, it is emblematic of the fact that they ran out of runway, or they ran out of highway. They ran out of material in a weird way. I mean, obviously, there's still lots of writing. I still think there's some good characters, but it starts to feel like a retread about the same time that you get that second tier of weapons. You know what I mean? I'm not saying the combat is like the most important thing, right? I'm not like saying like I wish there were better weapons. I'm saying like,
no, it's just emblematic of other issues like in the
okay,
game.
I get it.
And it's weird.
I get it. The numbers are going up.
I wish the areas were smaller.
Me too.
Like, I find my, like, the storytelling is at its best when you're in like a condensed area and you're like the storytelling feels, when I have like 15 different quests, I feel like I'm losing the stories aren't always strong enough to support something that you do something with for 15 minutes and then come back and finish it, you know, 4 hours later as you're like just doing like the fourth step of a bunch of quests that you've done as you're going from one side of the map to the other. Like, I lost the thread on a lot of like the whole Monarch issue until like the very end. And it's just, I'm curious what they'll end up doing if they do any DLC, if like stronger, smaller contained areas where like there's just more intertwinement between the stories, because there's a lot of strong writing in there. It's just, I don't like the connective tissue of how you get between them. And so like just one dense city, I think would be a lot more interesting than like the setup that they have.
You were describing Disco Elysium, which I put a little bit more time into.
I'm very happy that I put more time into it. If you took Outer Worlds, stripped out all the combat, like just crammed it down into like one planet where you're going between like a couple of different areas, and just took the exact same writing.
Yeah.
I bet it's a much stronger game.
Or I almost wish that they, like, you know, one of the things I like about the game is the ship means that you don't need to have giant areas. There's a couple of times you go to a spot that is like, hey, this is just, you know, an asteroid. This is not just an asteroid. This is like one corner of an asteroid where there's like a door. You go in the door and there's a person there, you know, whatever. I almost wish there was more of that style of like, hey, this is not a huge, you know, not even like Groundbreaker sized. You know, like the entrance to Groundbreaker sized, or like, you know, that style of like really tiny, almost like a bottle episode style. Like, hey, this is one little place. Everything is contained in here. Let's zip all around a bigger galaxy or a bigger solar system or more locations. Obviously, that means more art assets and more, you know, design and differentiation and blah, blah, blah. But I almost wish, it had been even more self-contained stories like that. Anyway, I still overall was, you know, okay with it, you know what I mean? I wish it had ended stronger, but we'll talk about it a little bit maybe later this week in a more spoilery way. Not released this week, but sometime this year, maybe you'll hear us talk about it in a more spoilery way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, also, I guess you told me you finished Eliza, but you want to maybe save that for once Rob is on the pod, because I'm sure
we should all talk
through that together. Sounds good. Let's take a break and then maybe answer some emails and then get the hell out of here. Sound good?
Sure.
All right. We'll be right back.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
All right, we are back. I have important emails. Important.
Wait, I want to yell at EA really quick.
Oh,
I was
going
to write a blog about this. Jason Schreier beat me to the punch. If you were watching football on Thanksgiving Day, Hopefully you have not finished Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Uh-huh. Hopefully you shut your fucking eyes during the commercial they showed. I'm not going to spoil what they showed. Austin,
I'm going to look it up.
The thing at the end of
fucking kidding me? What?
Straight up, they just throw a shot of it in.
Oh, that sucks.
Glad I know to avoid this.
Yeah.
That blows.
Jesus.
It sucks ass.
That sucks. It's such a cool moment.
Yeah, so I don't know whose fault it is, Xbox, you know, whoever is responsible, but like, it's like a totally normal trailer and then just like, blunk, and it's like, no, like it's such a cool reveal. Mm.
Yeah, that sucks. That sucks.
Don't watch the Black Friday trailer on the Xbox YouTube channel. Or if you're like DVRing some football games from the weekend.
Yeah, you just zip through them.
If you see Star Wars, just zip past that.
Yep.
Not cool.
All right, got an email here. From Oren, apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name. Hey, Waypoint Crew. Oren from New Jersey here. I went to Rutgers, home of the, quote, fat sandwich. I'm going to describe the fat sandwich. Picture French fries, chicken fingers, mm-hmm. honey mustard, mm. mozzarella sticks, all on a hoagie. Yes, a hoagie roll. In the lore of the food trucks at Rutgers, if you design your own sandwich and eat three of them in under an hour, you get to name it. What would you put on your sandwich and what would you name it? For example, in reference, here are three different named sandwiches at the Rutgers food trucks. The Fat Sam is a cheesesteak, grilled chicken, lettuce, tomato, french fries, mayo, and ketchup. It's too much stuff.
Okay.
The Fat Daryl is chicken fingers, mozzarella sticks, french fries, and marinara sauce. And the Fat Moon is chicken fingers, bacon, egg, lettuce, tomato, french fries, mayo, and ketchup. Oren says that their favorite is the Fat Mojo, chicken fingers, mozzarella sticks, french fries, and honey mustard. That seems simple compared to all the rest of these. It's ridiculous mm-hmm. that having read all those in order, I'm like, oh yeah, chicken fingers, mozzarella sticks, french fries, and honey mustard. That's
Jesus
all right.
Jesus Christ.
Does anyone here have like a custom sandwich that they would demand this place make? And then you'd eat three of them in under an hour? Because
No. Three. I couldn't eat three orders of
Let me tell you something. You're going to leave that college in between 1 and 4 years. You're never going back there.
Yeah.
They're going to erase your name.
Oh,
there's no
shit.
Legacy.
Damn.
Fat Austin who? They don't know. Not worth it.
What if you put a lasagna in a burrito?
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Wow.
Can I?
Shit. Wait, is there pasta still in there?
Lasagna. Lasagna needs the pasta. It's not just the...
Well, but if you consider the fact...
But I guess what he's asking, is it just like the... it be like a layer of pasta? Or are you putting like actual like pasta noodles? Because that...
Yeah.
It's pasta. I think maybe it's preference, but like because you can get the layer cake version or... you want to be able to pick your noodle. Like they'll put the whatever noodle you're feeling that day.
Whatever noodle you're feeling. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
That sounds good.
My first option,
a flat pasta as a wrap? Is this going too far?
Or that's a layer. It's a double wrap. There's no grip on pasta.
Right.
Yeah. So then
right.
you put the tortilla over it and that forms the shell.
God, that
beautiful.
Sounds good.
Shit, I want that for real.
Yo, this sounds good. I feel like this
because my first thought was a deep dish pizza burrito wrap, and then I thought lasagna. I was like, I think lasagna works better.
Oh, the cheese! Yeah. That would be so. Oh, I want lasagna now. Also, lasagna is great. I think we've collapsed. I think this is it.
Yeah,
the fat waypoint is definitely. Also, real quick though, I don't know that I trust this food truck to make us lasagna.
It has to be fried for them to do it. Seems like
everything else is fried. Fried lasagna exists for sure.
Probably.
Right?
You just take a cut of a...
Drop it.
Yeah.
That oil. Damn, I thought this was going to be a hard question, but we got it in a second. That was good. Nice work. This one comes in from... adjective in place name. DearGamingAdvice.com. Next year, I'll be starting a new job in a senior full-time position at a game studio in another city, about a five-hour train ride from my current home. I've met with the people there, have had the pleasure of working with them previously as a freelancer, and had nothing but positive experiences. The job has great benefits, a really competitive salary, and I feel like we could make some really awesome games together. All right, I think they've stopped listening. So here's the real rub. As excited as I am about this opportunity, I'm also kind of worried. I'm in my late 20s, I'm single, and I'll be moving to a new city alone. Besides people from the studio, I don't really know anyone there. In a professional setting, I can play the type A shtick pretty well, but the truth is I'm an introvert. I have no idea where to start when it comes to making new friends outside work. And to top things off, although there's a sizable English-speaking population where I'm moving, presumably not Anglo-Saxon, I'm guessing like there's going to be white people there. Although there's a sizable English-speaking population where I'm moving, I have no idea what this person's gender is. Although there's a sizable English-speaking population where I'm moving, most everyone speaks some English. I don't really speak the majority language, so it is a place where the majority language is not English. Gaming advice team, I know many of the crew have experience moving around for work and school. Do you have any gaming advice for dealing with the new city blues? Cheat codes for making new friends? Pro tips for quelling the dread fear that there is no one and nothing for miles that would remind you of the home you loved and left, the warm embrace of family and friends who accepted you and all your faults, but who will in time forget and replace you? Sincerely, adjective and place name.
Just start working on making that the big weight, the fat weight point, and just perfecting the creation of lasagna and a burrito.
I've definitely done this before, and it is tough. And I think part of it is being honest that it's going to be a little bit tough and giving yourself time and like not necessarily rushing yourself to like instantly and beating yourself up about not making those connections instantly.
Yeah.
I definitely think in my experience, the things that have helped, one is like, you will make friends at the place you work and try to spin that off in a way that is not just about work relationships. I don't mean like you and your team go out for beers once a week. Like that's all right. But like if you get a board game night with people who are not just people you work with, but like the friends of people of other people you work with, or in general, doing those sorts of events, doing board game nights, find a local bookshop. If you are in a non-majority English-speaking place, the chances are you're going to be able to find, a bar or something that does like that has a lot of expats, that has like an English-speaking group. You'll probably be able to, if you go.
There's probably like Facebook groups or like Reddit, subreddits that probably have like, hey, who speaks English?
Yes, exactly. And like that stuff can be awkward and weird because it's like, again, especially if you are introverted, I've been through this where you're like, I don't want to. It's like a lot of effort. Like it genuinely is a lot of effort to put yourself out there. But I suspect you will find that you will be better for it for having tried to do that stuff when it's right to do it. The other thing there is just like my other big advice there is just like if you feel like you're going to be alone there in some way, think about ways to spend that time that are things you've wanted to do anyway or things that are like, hey, you know what? Like I've always wanted to get into model making. I've always wanted to read more books. I've always wanted to da da da. And that's not like those things are better than socializing or something like that. But where this will really hurt you is if it is a Friday night and you have an open calendar and you are like, another Friday night where I've done nothing with my life except sit in front of this TV. Like if you really
and just despair over the fact that you've done nothing.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
When it's like, what if you make a plan and then something comes up and then you can't do the thing you'd already planned for? Like that's a nice for things to play out.
Totally. Exactly that. Where you're like, oh, you know what? I got really into train modeling. I got really into, you know, building these Gundam kits. I got really into a Warhammer or something. You know what I mean? Like those activities. And that's the other half of it too, is like, if you do find an activity that has a social aspect, find a board game store, go hang out in that board game store, go start playing Magic the Gathering, you know, get into the local FGC, something like that. It's one of the things that's nice about games is that in general, those communities want more people and those stores.
Even if you just go to
money.
Observe, right? Yeah, like sometimes totally. Don't even put the expectation on yourself that you're going to a thing to have a social, like sometimes like the reason I work at a Starbucks sometimes is not because I hope to make a friend. It's I get lonely working from home. And it's just nice to be around people like that sometimes is enough. And so it's not maybe, you know, find things to do, but like don't go and be like, if I don't make a friend here, exactly. If I don't talk to someone, this has been a failure. Like, no, sometimes it's just like going out and being around. It's just, you know, if you go to a local tournament, you could just watch and then go home and then you at least feel like I went out, I did something, like I participated in the community and like that's not nothing. And you do that enough times and you're going to just increase your chances that, you know, something does happen at some point.
Yeah.
Something in, similar in that vein, too, is like, and this for some reason I feel like has a weird stigma around it, but going to the movies by yourself is like an interesting, like, there's still like a communal aspect, especially to like a movie where there'll be lots of reaction, like horror or like an action movie where people like cheer and stuff. Like it can be, it can help you feel less lonely even if you're not directly like, you know, speaking to the people to the left and right of you.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Those sorts of things are really fun. Likewise, if you're like into sports, sporting events can be really interesting and fun. I definitely, part of my social anxiety is being in public spaces like that alone can be weird. It takes me a long time to get to the point where I can go to the movies alone. Like it, like for real years and years and years, I'm still like have some anxiety when I do it, which is super weird because lots of people go to the movies alone.
Yeah.
Or like the other big one is like if you, there's an entire like, hey, what if you wanted to go out and eat by yourself somewhere? Like there are all those little things can be really big hurdles for certain types of anxiety. And you know, to some degree it's about practice, to some degree it's about good therapy. But like working at it and understanding that you have to work at this and it is not going to be a thing where you get there and you're like, boom, like my engines are, I'm firing on all engines, I'm just going for it. It is okay for this to be a project that is in your life in a way that is not necessarily like a thing that solves itself instantly. Good luck. I hope the move goes well. Also the other thing here is 5 hours is distance, but it's not, you know, it's not 50 hours. You know what I mean? It's not two plane rides. It's not a layover.
You could get back. You could do a car ride if you needed to.
If you needed to. Yeah. Presumably if you're not separated by like the ocean or something. Like I don't know if that's 5 hours by train, 5 hours by car, 5 hours by, you know, I don't know what
but
it is.
They said train.
Oh, did they? Okay. Well then, yeah, 5 hours by train. That's a trip you could make.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of going home for a weekend
right,
here totally. And there. Presuming that you have the time off, please don't be devoured by the beast of games development. All right. This one comes in from Freddie. Hello, Waypoint Radio. I'm Freddie, a Swedish listener, them. For the past 2 summers, I've been working as a mail person while I'm on break from attending university full time. It's a job I actually enjoy, despite the monotony, and it's part of why I was interested in Death Stranding. It was because it was essentially billed as extreme mail delivery. After playing it for about 12 to 14 hours, I think I can say that Death Stranding actually captures a lot of both the joys and tribulations that come with delivering mail. The way you find your own little routes, the feel of carrying a giant precarious stack of cargo up a large apartment building / mountain, the relief of feeling your burden lighten, the end of your route when you're just racing back to the post center to drop off your van and equipment, and the endless managing of your mail / cargo. Another thing Death Stranding also nails about delivering mail is about how when it rains, it pours both literally and figuratively. The weather, timefall / BTs, will frequently ruin your day regardless of how well you're sorting your cargo in the morning goes. Small accidents such as tripping on a doorstep or having to brake too harshly will throw your letters or cargo into disarray. Large quantities of awkwardly shaped packages will slow you down. And then there's customers. All in all, Death Stranding, though exaggerated in the ultimate Porter Simulator, though exaggerated, is the ultimate Porter Simulator in this listener's opinion. Cheers, Freddie. It's good to know. It's good to know that Death Stranding is accurate representation of what it means to be a male person.
That's very good.
I feel like I want more. If you're out there and you deliver mail or packages for a living, I want to know how Death Stranding has affected you. Do you feel like it's an accurate representation? Do you feel like you can like relax and play that game, or does it feel like work? I want to know. Write in, please, if you're out there. Either of you keep up with Death Stranding? Put any more hours into it?
Not yet.
I want to get back to it, but it's game of the year is like I need to like line up games and finish them. Like I gotta stop doing like I'm juggling 6 games at once. It was like I started Eliza, finished it. I've been playing Outer Worlds. I'm gonna finish that, and then it's a thing. I did a post on a Thanksgiving post that was the post is I'm trying to beat way too many video games before 2019 is over.
Yeah,
I took every game that I wanted to finish, like not real, like that I knew I was gonna, but every game like meaningfully I wanted to try, and then I went to how long to beat, and I took the average hour count, and then I put a percentage on my desire desired probability that I think I will actually finish it. And the ones that I wanted to came out to 72 and a half hours. So don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, you know, unfortunately, games like, yeah, you got to pick your battles. It's like, you know, I wanted to play Astral Chain, but I saw it was 18 and a half hours. And I'm like, that's not going to happen.
I wish it was like eight. If it was like 8 hours, that game would be easier to recommend. Anyway, one last question here comes in from One Legend, who says, when I was younger and played games, I used to often think the computer characters, the CPU characters, could read the inputs from my controller and react accordingly, especially in fighting games. Is this true? Has it always been true? Have you ever had moments in games where you felt the CPU was using your inputs to your disadvantage? I should note that the subject of this is, does the computer really cheat? I think most of the
time. Oh, in Mario Kart, for sure. Racing games, for sure.
Sports games, we know there's rubber banding. Which is like where the game has been programmed to like make the computer play better to keep the game tight, to keep scores tight. What else? A lot of things have that style of rubber banding to like try to keep it competitive. But what I will say is like fighting games are a unique thing because even the highest level difficulty, playing a fighting game against like a level 8 CPU or whatever in Street Fighter is not going to be as useful or difficult as playing against a real person who has been playing the game, yeah. Right? Like, you don't train against a level 8 CPU. You train against a real player. Though I think there are specific instances in classic fighting games where the computer is literally cheating and doing stuff like charging a Sonic Boom with Guile without holding the back button. Without like, so, like there are
that makes sense.
Rude.
But it tends to be that more than reading your input. I think. The one that always
go ahead. No. You can finish.
The one that I always was like, was like Puzzle Quest or that style of like competitive puzzle, like Bejeweled style, but RPG elements where it so often felt like I would make a move and the next shit that came in would let my opponent get like a triple combo or whatever. Like I believe them when they say it's not how it works. I believe them. But in my heart of hearts, I feel like I'm being screwed over. So I don't know. Patrick gets something
else. One of my it's adjacent to all this, but when I was really into PC games during like the Quake era, and one of the coolest outshoots of like the modding community back then was the early development of AI like shooter opponents. Like that's just not a thing that existed. And the community, it was like the ones who would develop these AI, I think they were called AI bots, that you could like play 1v1. And like one of the more successful ones, like they ended up like getting hired by like id Software to come in and like work on their shit. But that was one of those like amazing moments when I was younger where you didn't have to play online with a bunch of people who were better than you. Like you could play against this bot that you could like tune, but that it oftentimes, at least relative to what we had back then,
yeah,
felt like you were actually playing a person.
That is how I felt about like the Perfect Dark bots. Was like, my friends aren't going to be able to come over and play Perfect Dark with me every day. You know, the way that I wish they could have when we were playing GoldenEye a lot. But Perfect Dark has bots. I can play against these bots. That feels good. it's funny because like now I feel like you look at something like Overwatch had bots, but it was like, man, this is just not. I think the more complex the game gets and the more like interesting the abilities could interact with each other, the less exciting it is mm-hmm. when I'm just playing against a bot, you know? Yeah. I kind of feel the same way about like I'm playing something like PUBG Mobile where you're like, oh, I'm fighting against bots. I can tell this is not fun. You know, this is not.
Hey, it's kind of a bummer we started playing Fortnite before they added bots. I bet we would have had a better time with Fortnite if 100%. We played it with bots.
I bet we would have. That was last year.
Was that last? Yeah, so
that was, yeah, it was before.
It was last year, and I think the bots got added this year.
The bots got added this year for sure. That was a big thing.
Just seems like that would have been a much more a better onboarding process to like the building stuff would have been to go up against bots who you could probably beat, but you could learn a little bit more about what to do.
You just get comfortable
along the way.
I gotta go back. Yeah. I gotta play more Apex. There's like all the stuff I want to check back in on this year that I like put time into and stepped away from, and just it's time. It keeps moving. I got to play more Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
God.
Did you ever finish Control?
I never finished Control. I gotta finish Control. I gotta finish.
Nah, you should finish Control. Like Control is it's got a great ending too.
There's a specific set of things in Control I know that are coming out that I want to get to, and it's just like it is just a time thing. It is like that is a game I'll finish before I write my list, but probably not before we talk about it later this week. unfortunately, I have to. That is where my head is at now. It's like, okay, what do I need to finish before we record later this week? Because that's the stuff that I want to be able to talk about. So we'll see.
Don't worry, I'm going to fit in 25 hours of Outer Wilds between now and Wednesday.
You are not going to do that.
Not going to happen. No, not going to happen.
That is also the worst way to play that game, is what I would say. It's like trying to rush through it in that way would just make you hate it, because all of the little...
I'm already fully confident that 2019's best games of 2020 are for me, like, I'm like, Disco Elysium's gonna be like my favorite game of the year, and then Outer Wilds would be like number two. I already know that's what's gonna happen with both those games.
Yeah. I will say, in Final Fantasy 14, where I'm finally going into the final set of patches before Heaven's Word, because I had to slow down to play a bunch of fucking games to write about and talk about. I hit a really good J-Rock song. I hit a boss. I'm going to play this. Yes. I'm going to link you to this. We'll go out listening to this fucking jam. I fought Shiva. Shiva. That fight was cool, but it was over so quick that I barely got to like soak in the ridiculous vibes of this fight. Just know there's a first phase of this fight where it's like the first phase of this fight is like Shiva is kind of like ethereal and like mystical and floating around all like peacefully, and like you're kind of not peacefully, you're fighting her, she's summoning shit, but then shit pops off. Kato, do you want to count you in on this jam?
Yeah.
The name of this song is, God, does it not Oblivion, I think it's called. Thank
Shiva
you.
Shiva theme phase two.
Phase two.
Parentheses.
Oblivion. All right. 3, 2, 1, go. This is like when the OP kicks in.
Yeah.
In the big fight at the end of the anime season. But like it plays the full version of
it. During the fight.
I love it. Hell yeah.
Oh.
Also, this is a version of the fight I've not fought, because this looks way harder than what I did. I had to deal with all that shit. This must be the like extreme difficulty version. I just want people to know that this song fucking slaps.
Yeah.
And
who is this? Fuck.
I have no idea. I don't know. Anyway, what you can tell from looking at this is Final Fantasy 14, that's an MMO.
Yeah.
That's just seriously. Still an MMO. I like this game, but yeah. Anyway, that is my Final Fantasy check-in. I'm close to Heaven's Word. I'm going to get there. Nice. I'm going to probably after this. Probably not this week because of needing to prep for Goody stuff, but yeah.
Goody.
Gotti.
Gotti.
Gotti. all right, we're just going to do it for us this week. I don't think anyone else has any other announcements. Patrick, anything exciting going up on the site this week that people should be looking forward to?
No, I'll let you know what I'm doing as soon as I get off this podcast. Oh, one thing I would ask people, one of the projects I'm going to do in December, it's for January, but in a post-Stadia world, I want to explore a bunch of the other like cloud options and like just kind of go through them, because now I'm sort of like obsessed with this notion of trying to optimize like a way that I could play my games wherever I want. So I've signed up for Shadow, which essentially you rent a PC, like straight up. You turn on Shadow on your once you've signed up, and Windows Update is there. Like, you go through the Cortana Windows process, and there's just a fucking desktop. High-end PC. It's fascinating. I got access to GeForce Now, and NVIDIA is going to send me a Shield sometime in December.
Wow.
Which I've actually heard, like, the Shield is fucking cool as hell and works really well. And then I already have PlayStation Now. They like sent me like a year sign. Like there was like a desperate moment where Sony was like sending out like, "Yo, PlayStation Now," and I was like, "Sure, I'll take a code," but like I never checked it out. So once I got that, so if there's other weird services that do similar things. Like Shadow's not one that I had heard about till a PR person around the time of Stadia coverage was like, "Hey, here's like another thing doing this," and I'd never heard of it. So if there's other ones you can think of that either you use or other people use that are like, you know, based around the idea of playing your games wherever you go, I'm going to do big features on kind of all of them in January. So if
I'm
there's
so curious.
Anything that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, interesting because like so like the high end PC thing is was really neat until you start dealing with like cloud save logistics, right? Ooh. So Outer Worlds is on Epic Game Store. Epic Game Store doesn't do cloud saves, right. And so it's like yes, you can spin up this PC away from home, but then you got to like find the saves, put them in Dropbox, then like download the Epic Game Store on the PC, put the also install Dropbox, you know what I mean? Like,
what if you were only playing it on their service? Would you still need to somehow?
Well, I think
export?
That's what it's. I think that's really what it's.
So
meant.
You get a when it spins one up, it's loading you into your desktop,
your PC. It's not like spinning up an instance. Like it is spinning up a specific PC because like it says things even like. When I was logging, I just, like, hit quit, and I was like, hey, wait, like, can you properly log out so, like, the Windows security updates can get applied?
Oh, that's
was
very
like,
funny.
Oh, okay. So I do, and the reason I even went down the path was when I had mentioned it in a Vice Slack, someone responded saying, like, oh, like, my friend used that to play, like, Overwatch competitively. Like, it's a terrific service. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's intense.
So, yeah. So, but yeah, there's other ones that people can think of if that doesn't, I think that covers most of them, but if they're, I'm specifically trying to think of like smaller services that even might be regional based that, are in that kind of wheelhouse, please reach out and let me know.
Hell yeah. You can do that by going to twitter.com/PatrickKlepek, I believe. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That is true. That's you got me.
I got it. Whew. Kato, where can people find you on Twitter?
At @A_Kato_appears.
You can find me on Twitter @Austin_Walker. You can find us as a show, as a community at twitter.com/Waypoint, waypoint.advice.com. What else is going on? Shout out to Bowen for letting us use the track Missy of the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that. waypoint.zone/BOEN. And stay tuned for some more good stuff later this week. We again, Patrick and Rob are going to be in town. We'll try to do another podcast probably we will have a Friday podcast.
There will be a Friday, whether it was recorded today or
will be a
previously
past, a previously on Waypoint. Yeah, we'll figure something out there. Next
time on
Waypoint.
Chikai.
Yeah, what is next time on Waypoint is Rob talking to someone at a convention.
Yeah.
Or us finding 30 minutes to do a check-in, but I don't know that we'll have much to check in. We'll see. We'll see where the week takes us. I hope the week takes you, listener, to a good place. Where I really hope is it takes you home. Fuck capitalism. Go home. We'll just knock it out this time. Fuck capitalism. Go home. That's it. Done. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Sometimes you just say, on this the cyberist of Mondays, fuck capitalism. Go home.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right.
I don't want to describe anything as the cyberist of...
The cyberist. The most cyber of Mondays.
Someone sent me a Mario Maker postcard with this.
That's perfect. Love it. Mm-hmm. I love that photo. It's a great photo.
Why is that a postcard?
You can print anything these days. Right.
The internet.
It's a classic Alex Navarro.
Yeah.
That's like a rare Alex Navarro. You know what I mean? Like, this mm-hmm. shiny Alex mm-hmm. Navarro.
I was going to say. Yeah, what's the Pokemon
shiny.
Thing?
Yeah, shiny. All right.
That's the only difference is the facial hair.
The facial hair. What? Does he not? Is he shaved right now? God, what's Alex look like right now?
I can't remember. I haven't seen him in a while. Still time to grab Monopoly review code. That's good.
I'm all right.
Oh.
I think I'm okay. I mean, it is Game of the Year season, so maybe we should check it out.
Yeah, it's just...
You gotta make sure you play everything.
Yeah. Cyber Monday / the International Day for the Abolition of Slavery.
Wow.
Just
fucking
really
release us from the slavery of capitalism on Monday.
If you were doing abolitionist work right now, chances are you're looking at like, you know, slave labor inside of mineral work, slave labor inside of manufacturing work, sex trafficking, which is not sex work, different, you know, there's different fields, different, not fields, you know what the fuck I mean. Cyber Monday, in terms of just like overlap there, Cyber Monday really hits the manufacturing and the mineral work pretty well. So, Cyber Monday.
Yeah, it's putting things like iPads on sale and just really hitting that sweet spot.
Really hitting that sweet spot.
Says the person who bought an iPad on last Friday.
We're releasing a Friends of the Table t-shirt today, so we're all fucking complicit. Anyway, 50...
It was 100 bucks off.
100 bucks off. Listen, I truly don't have ill will towards people who make purchases on Black Friday or on Cyber Monday.
Yeah,
it is very expensive to be a person and to buy things. And like I only got Christmas gifts because my parents could find shit on sale or put stuff on layaway blah, 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 blah. So like it's hard for me to make the same thing.
People like shitting on people that like go shop at Walmart. It's like, okay, look, I get it. Walmart.
Fuck Walmart.
Put a lot of mom and pop places out of business. Absolutely. Fuck Walmart. But also like if you got to buy food in bulk it's cheap and you can't afford a Costco subscription, you know,
go to Walmart. Right. And also at that point, like, you know, it's... The people I would rather spend my energy punching up and you know, push for better legislation around protecting small businesses and local businesses. I would rather like be frustrated with the landlords and landowners who you know make moves that push out.
I thought you said Lando.
Well, I'd rather be mad at Lando. No, I'm not. Did you see
that? Didn't Lando just come out as gender fluid?
Yeah, so Billy Dee Williams article.
But then also good. I saw that, but then someone like immediately posted, because this is just true of these. It's like, oh,
yeah, of course.
Person who did good thing, maybe good thing, also did shit. It was like, oh, like maybe it was involved in spousal abuse like in the 90s. Like,
I'm not surprised. Yeah, shit. Sure. Yeah, great. Great. Good. That Vanity Fair interview is worth reading. That Billy Dee Williams Vanity Fair piece. Fucking, of course, bad if he was involved in spousal abuse. That fucking sucks.
Yeah.
But a very cool, in general, it's always interesting to read folks talk about their gender identity who are not necessarily of a generation that had the same language that we have for it, right?
Right.
Like, in the piece, Billy basically says like, oh, I used, just like in the middle of a sentence, it's just like bringing out the best of himself or herself, referring to themselves. And then like Boz is like, did you notice I just said himself or herself? Wink. Like, yeah, like I'm in touch with my femininity. I'm like, I think that I use both words. I'm happy to use both, blah, blah, blah. And like not in a way that feels like it came through gender theory. Do you know what I just like? Right. Or even through, or necessarily even through contemporary, you know, queer and trans.
No, I think it's more just like a larger acceptance of it's just like, it's the moment it becomes cool or trendy to be gender fluid, yes, like that can be shitty, but it also is that like is, a certain recognition. It's a certain kind of progress that doesn't necessarily feel good, but like does but does signal something in the culture.
It didn't even read as like being trendy for me. In fact, what it felt like for me, it felt like that's something that you know, Billy has had like in the back of mind for a long time. Do you know what I mean?
You look at Lando and it's not hard to go from like, A to B.
Oh no, totally. I mean, that was the funniest bit was I think the interviewer brought up the thing that Donald Glover had said about Lando being pan, which is not the same thing as being gender fluid. At all, but the interviewer is like, "Oh, look, like these are both types of queerness," and Billy Dee was like, "I knew that kid was good." Basically, you see those videos he makes. You see those videos, like, "Yeah, we saw this is America. We did." much funnier if Billy Dee Williams was talking about the Derek comedy videos from 12 years ago that Donald Glover got his start at, some of which do not hold up so well these days.
Mm.
12 years is a long time.
It is. It is. They were like, what if you wanted to make a College Humor video in the mid-2000s, but you weren't at College Humor, which meant you had zero oversight?
Right. So, okay, yeah.
There's some funny stuff in there. And a lot of other – there's actually a couple other people who kind of came through that group and made it. Anyway, we should clap and do a podcast about video games.
Sure.
I'm very tired. 7 seconds?
Sure.
All right.